Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Kickstarter Spotlight episode. It's also part of our 12 days of the Comic Source. So today we're going to be talking about a Kickstarter campaign called Stanley the Snowman, The Awakening. And I have the creator with me, Austin Janikowski. Thanks for joining me, Austin.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. This is a very appropriate Kickstarter to be talking about, especially as part of our 12 days of the Comic Source Blitz, where we're releasing 78 episodes in 12 days. So appreciate you coming on to talk about it. And as always, when we have somebody on the show for the first time, we like them to sort of give their secret origin. So, you know, you've been in the comic industry for a long time, 25 years, working with, you know, various publishers and such. So let's go all the way back. Let's go back to your childhood. Were comics a big part? What were some of your favorites? How did you get into reading them? And then you can kind of talk about your journey and maybe some previous work that our listeners might be familiar with.
Sure, absolutely. So I started drawing when I was 6 or 7. My grandfather was a very good artist, painter, sculptor, and whatnot. And we would visit in the summer. He had a cottage, no TV. So when it rained, there wasn't much to do. And started learning how to draw, and I drew birds. And then I got into D&D soon after that, when I was about 10. So I drew fantasy characters and all that. And then when I was 15, I was going down to Florida, visit my cousin. And once again, rain, and there's nothing to do. And I noticed that he had a comic book, and it was X-Men 205. Mm. And I said, well, there's nothing else to do. I read it. And I said, oh, my God, this is amazing. And it's like, well, there's like 12 more. Burned through those like nothing. And then I'm like, oh, my God, how? And he's like, well, there's a comic book store we can go, you know, since it's raining, let's go there. So we went to the comic book store, and it was just like, oh. It was absolutely just incredible. As soon as you walk in the door, you got like this line of comic books.
Right.
Daredevil and X-Men and everything like that. So I bought from like way back from 125 all the way on up. I just burned through my money and I just read them all. And so X-Men was really the first book I got into, but I was ravenous. I bought every major Marvel, every major DC character books, origins, you know, a long line of collections over the years. And I loved drawing the characters. I thought it was absolutely amazing. The medium itself was incredible because it was very unique. It was something that I had not ever experienced before. And the only thing close to it was film. Growing up, I was in, you know, theater and musicals and everything. But this was like, this wasn't just reading a book. This was like, there's imagery and there's emotion, there's everything. And I was hooked. So fast forward to college. I got into graphic design. It was called commercial art back then. They didn't really have computers. And I was with friends with a couple of artists that were much more talented than I, like the stupidly, disgustingly talented people that don't have to try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom, he was one of those guys. So, I lived in upstate New York, and they had a big show every year called the Make-A-Wish, show. And Bart Sears was going to be there. And I was on the Justice League Europe kick. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to meet Bart Sears because I wanted a Power Girl sketch because he drew people very well. And I wanted boobs because I was early 20s. And that was very important to me. So I grabbed some samples and I went there. Just, I don't know why I grabbed them, maybe to show them to somebody, but I was super nervous. And I'm waiting in line, and I finally get it, and I'm in awe, and he's drawing, and I'm not really paying attention. He hands it to me, and I look at it, and it's just a headshot from, like, the shoulder blades up. And I'm standing there, and I'm looking at the photo, I'm looking at him, and back down, and he notices. He's like, what? And I'm like, dude, Power Girl, headshot, really? He's like, you know how many of these I've drawn? And I'm like, well, like, that's a problem. So then he's like, what, are you an artist? And then I, you know, no, he's like, oh, are these your samples? And I'm like, and I showed my samples to him. And then it's funny because he took a second to look, and then they were Tom's pencils, my inks. And he stopped and really looked at them. Now, Graham Nolan was sitting on his left, and he was working on Hawk World. Tom Lyle was was working on Robin at the time, and Tom Vincent was next to him, got passed on the table. Everybody looked at him, wrote little notes. And they said, well, this is pretty good. If you work on these things, you could actually work in comic books. So just work on this and come back next year. And I was on cloud nine. Told everyone I was going to be a comic book artist. They said, that's great. You're going to need a backup plan just in case. So that's kind of my thing. I got my degree in design as my backup plan while I was going into comic books. And luckily, my backup plan turned into 22 years in the advertising industry, working for Disney and Universal and NASCAR. And I retired as a creative director about 5 years ago, and I'm still doing comic books today.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, starting with that love of comics, you know, early on, you know, it sounds like as soon as you, you know, read your first comic, basically you were hooked. It was kind of the same for me. But always, you were always looking at it as sort of a visual storytelling medium. I guess what I'm asking was it always the art that drew you to it more so than the narrative, than the stories?
No, Chris Claremont hooked me. And I picked on him when I yelled at him when I saw him when we started becoming friendly. I said, this is all his fault, the whole story aspect of it. No, his storytelling and how immersive and the different storylines and tangents and the character development was great. The artwork enhanced that, you know what I mean? And the artwork worked into, so it was in tangent. What was really nice back then, and I didn't know at the time, was the art teams, writers and artists, had a minimum 12 months to work together. And they didn't have tight deadlines. They worked ahead of time and had storylines. It was planned way in advance. So you could tell the quality was there. And they really paid attention to the specifics and the little stuff when it came to the storylines. And it was, like I said, immersive. The story brought me in. The artwork kept the ride going. It worked symmetry together. And then I could not wait for the next issue. I was just like chomping at the bit.
Then when you thought about making a career out of it, I mean, did you realize, right? Because when I started reading comics, I mean, it was the same way. I was just pulled into the story and the characters and the power. I remember, you know, being on a limited budget as a, you know, 5-6 year old kid, I always would go for the team books because then I felt like I was getting more bang for my buck because I was getting to see more power. So like Legion of Superheroes was, you know, was a big favorite, Avengers. But it took me a while. I would probably read comics for 5 years, if not more, before it finally clicked to me that, hey, there are people that actually have to create these. It's not just, you know, appear as if from magic. So that was, you know, right around 10 or 11, I started recognizing artistic styles. And then a little later, probably 14 or 15, I started following writers. So when did that sort of click for you? And did you always think, okay, I'm going to go into the visual side of it rather than becoming a writer?
No, I didn't really think about becoming a writer or an artist. I wanted to be involved in some aspect of it. Besides Marvel and DC, I love the independent books. I love Cerebus. It was amazing. ElfQuest defined my high school years. I actually have a high school quote talking about ElfQuest. It's in my yearbook. So independent comic books were just as like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. All that was just, to me, it was magical, is the only thing I can say. The whole thing was just absolutely magical. And I wanted to be able to do and be a part of that magic in some form or fashion. So I said, I'm going to be a comic book artist, and I could, you know, ink. I didn't know what I was doing. Not at all. So it took a good couple years of fumbling around of me deciding, okay, I want to be an inker. Because back then, inking was finishing the page. Right. Color was not really that important. Color was something that you put on after the fact. You had color guides. They would slap it on when they printed it, and that was it. Not like how there is today. And I said, so let me get this straight. I can work with great writers and stories and great artists. Oh, I wanted that. So that's kind of what I did. So I tried pen and everything for the first year until realizing if you want to do it right, you have to learn to brush. And that's kind of how I fell into it. I found more success as an inker in the higher echelons of trying to break in than was storytelling. But I published my first book in late 94, early 95, called Seventh Millennium. Mm-hmm. The first company I worked with, Ally Comics, I was supposed to ink a book called Cosmic Force. For whatever reason, it didn't happen. I can't remember because I'm old. but I had this storyline literally based on my D&D characters and a buddy of mine, Chris. We were working at Radio Shack. We came up with the idea of, wouldn't it be neat if we did like a story about 7,000 years in the future? And radiation was the basis of all magic because some people can manipulate it. And that's how you got the mutations for the different races. We wanted the scientific, that's the word, scientific background. So when someone questions what we were doing, we had, well, here's why. Here's right. The scientific reasoning behind it. So that got me thinking on storytelling on a larger base, not just the idea, but being able to back it up with actual facts. And then the more I got into it and the larger books that I worked on, I go, well, this is really neat. And it just fueled my imagination for ideas that I would write something, this is cool, and then I'd put it away. And then I would come back to it. And the books that I've got coming out now are 10 or 15 years old when I first thought about them. So,
yeah, and let's talk a little bit about your project here at Kickstarter. So as you're hearing this, everybody, there are 6 days left in the campaign. This is not fully funded yet. So we definitely need your help to get it backed. You have until December 29th at 8 p.m. Pacific time. It's Tuesday, December 29th at 8 p.m. Pacific is when the campaign will come to an end. It's over halfway, but not all the way funded yet. So we definitely want to bring this to life because if you're a fan of winter and snowman and Christmas, certainly like I am, you're going to want to back this. So, Austin, why don't you give everybody kind of the elevator pitch? What is the story all about?
So Stanley's Snowman is about Jenny, who's our hero in the story. She is one in a generation, has the ability to bring Stanley to life through family, faith, love, and a little bit of magic. And in order to do so, she has to give something or add something to Stanley. Like in past generations, he has the hat, he has the scarf, he has the nose, he has the hands. Same thing, she has a locket that she gives Stanley that she made with the help of her father, who's actually a jeweler. So this is issue number one of 6 issues, and it's bringing Stanley to life every holiday season. It's called Operation Stanley. And the storyline of the actual series is, after he's brought to life, they witness a trip to go down to Florida State at a timeshare, and they leave him behind. And he normally watches TV night with his family, notices that the neighbor's lights are on, wanders over and sees a TV commercial says Florida Snowmen, and he's just stunned because he assumes there's no snowmen in Florida. But obviously, if the TV says it, it has got to be true. So he decides to make the trek down to Florida, spend Christmas with his family, and he's helped by Charlie, the ice cream vendor, and he's chased by Stiles Weatherby, local weatherman, trying to make a bid to get on the Today Show.
That's fantastic. And this is an all-ages book, is that right?
Absolutely. So I have 3 daughters. They're amazing and they're independent. They're in their 20s now. But when they were younger, one Christmas, they're opening presents and they were kind of bickering how one had, you know, a bigger present than the others and one had more than the other. And I thought to myself, when we were growing up, we had one big present and that was basically it. You got your stocking, one big present, and maybe something from the relatives. Nothing like there is today. And the commercialism that has engulfed the entire world in the last 20 or so years is a lot more prevalent. So I thought traditions are being pushed back to the side. Traditions are very important in our family. My dad was born on Christmas Day. So I came up with the idea of, you know, talking about the traditions and compared to the commercialism of a holiday season. But I wanted to tell it so you weren't talking about Santa or reindeers or anything like that. And no one's done a snowman story since Frosty, really. That's kind of how it came to be. And I wanted a strong female character. And Jenny is the embodiment of my 3 daughters. I took little bits and pieces of each of them. And that's Jenny. Yeah.
Gotcha. And, you know, obviously we're in the Christmas season now. Was it always your plan to kind of run the campaign during the Christmas season and then have the fulfillment, you know, obviously a little while later?
Well, so Stanley has actually been picked up by Scout Comics, I'm lucky enough to say, and they have an all-age imprint called Scoot. So I talked with the publisher of the imprint, and he goes, if you want to maybe run a campaign for in December, you know what I mean, to 2020 was tough money-wise, so if it helps, you know, some covering some costs, we can make sure we're getting our books ready and everything's paid for. Go ahead. I mean, it's, you know, holiday book. Let's go ahead and do that. So that's kind of what we thought about. We're launching the first issue in July for Christmas in July, and we're finishing in December. And then we'll do the trade paperback after that. So that's kind of the thought. So we're starting now to get the ball rolling. We'll start talking more about it in the next few months, and then we'll lead it into July with further and fanfare and awesome covers and the whole nine.
Cool. Is there are some of these tiers and rewards on the Kickstarter, are they going to be exclusive to Kickstarter? Or if somebody, you know, like you said, 2020 has been tough for people. If money's a little tight and they're thinking, well, you know, maybe when they'll be in a better position to pick it up from Scout when it comes out in the middle of the year, are they going to be able to get the same covers and all the same rewards, or are some of these going to be Kickstarter exclusive?
Unfortunately, all of these are going to be exclusive just for the Kickstarter.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now we're lucky enough to have Mitsuru Arita do a cover. I'm lucky enough to call him a friend. We met years ago at a show, and he was very kind enough and had the time to do an amazing cover for the Kickstarter. Whether he has time to do other ones for the series that remains, he doesn't do covers. He's a concept game artist, and I think he's only done covers for like one other book like the entire time, but he's like the Pokemon master card. And I only first knew about him because my son-in-law loves Pokemon and knew instantly who he was. So
gotcha.
Yeah, the rewards are pretty much on the Kickstarter, and that's about it. We might have something similar. I'm not quite sure, but this is just made, all of these are made specifically just for this Kickstarter.
Hey, I mean, yeah, I mean, there, obviously there's positives and negatives, so that it's great for people that can back it. And I think that's even better because, you know, it gives people incentive to back it now. I mean, obviously if you can't afford to right now, that's, you know, I feel for you because this is an incredible book, and especially, you know, this time of year. And the covers are great. You even have a socially distanced one where Stanley's staying outside while Jenny's inside. So I thought that was pretty cool. But on the Kickstarter page, everybody, and I'll put a link in the show notes where you can go and check it out. You also have the first, you know, few pages of the story there. And the art there is also, you know, very incredible. It's obviously kind of that Asian style, a little bit manga influenced. So can you talk about your artist that you have on the series and what that collaboration has been like?
Yeah. So when I first came up with the idea with Stanley, I had an artist, Casey Moyer. We wanted to do an animated style. But honestly, it just wasn't ready. She came out of just college, and we weren't fully sure where the story was going to be. So we kind of put it back on the shelf. And then when I decided I really wanted to do this, and I thought an anime art style would be great. Again, don't know anything about anime, but my son-in-law sure does. And he talked to me about there's 40 or 50 different manga styles, and I have to choose which one I kind of like and then go to the artists, because artists do specific ones. So Juan Pablo Montriego Marcial, and I'm sure I'm saying it not perfectly, but Juan Pablo, great guy. He's from Peru. He had the perfect art style for what I wanted to do with Stanley, and he jumped on board and just absolutely crushed it.
Yeah. I mean, the lines are clean. I mean, and everybody, you know, that's listening to this, you probably are familiar with the manga style, you know, so the eyes are big. The art style is very clean, innocent. Colors are very bright. So it really, you know, and this would be the colors on the cover because it's a black and white book. But it really evokes that feeling of, you know, an innocent time, happiness, Christmas, family. Was that sort of the thought that you wanted to kind of push that tone for the story?
Yeah, 100%. We wanted to have that kind of color palette for the warmth and you know, the holiday season and getting together and family. Because, you know, you're going to find out during I want to talk more about it. I can't. So as you get farther into the story, we're going to be using a color palette, not only to help tell the story, but help tell the mood of the story. So, because, like, again, growing up, they did that amazingly well, as colors were more introduced. So we're basically going to try to do the same thing. Same with animated films. They have color palettes to tell moods and everything. We're going to do the same thing with this book.
Gotcha. And to talk about Jennifer a little bit, you know, you mentioned her being inspired by your three daughters, you know, and kind of an amalgamation of those three. So I wonder what was the most challenging part of the character development for Jenny and for Stanley too, for that matter. Was there anything in particular that it took you a while to kind of get rolling, to get things, you know, where you wanted them to be?
So I wanted someone to be confident, but not bossy. And it's kind of, that's a fine line. Mm. So I thought, in order to do that, it would be interesting if she was kind of militant, not more military than militant. I guess that's a better word, more military. And then how would she be military? Because her dad's a jeweler. Her grandfather was in the military for years and years and years. He was the one before her. He was able to bring Stanley to life. So they had that connection. And that's where she identifies her identity, as she's trying to emulate her grandfather. And that's kind of how it came to be. My youngest daughter, she's 21. She has spina bifida, and she is my inspiration. She's absolutely amazing. The stuff that she is able to do, despite the fact that multiple doctors have told her there's no way possible that she could do these things, is just, her strength is just, everyone, if they could have like a tenth of that strength, they'd be able to do some amazing stuff. So yeah, that's her, Jenny's strength is kind of, that's where it comes from, hope.
Gotcha. That's great. Yeah, there's no better way for somebody like that to challenge themselves than to have somebody tell them they can't do something.
Yeah, you can't do that to her, because she'll try to prove otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. Well, is this the first Kickstarter that you've run?
No. Actually, I've done two others. Three. I ran my first one for a zombie series called Zombies Were Human Too, telling zombie stories before and how they became zombies. It is a PG-13 graphic novel series told by three kids. In order to calm the youngest of the three, the other two pick out zombies and make up stories of who they were, how long they lasted, and how they died, sometimes in a funny way. So that was our first Kickstarter we got successfully funded. We ran the second one in March, when the pandemic first started, and we decided to cancel it because we did not want people to worry about, you know, having to pay us, you know,
right.
Who knew what was going to happen money wise, whatever. We didn't want to be a burden. So we pulled it back, and then we ran it again. We relaunched it and got it successfully funded in September. So, and this is my fourth one.
So has this, Have there been any particular challenges for this one that you didn't necessarily anticipate?
Yeah, I was hoping to launch on the first. Unfortunately, we weren't able to. We launched a little bit later. Every Kickstarter is kind of tough. Social media is fighting against you. Unless that you pay for the advertising, then they're more helpful to it. Mm-hmm. So getting word of mouth, even on the holiday season, it's tough. And, you know, with 2020, everyone is really focusing on trying to get some holidays. Money's tight. So I don't blame it going slow. I'm hoping we can get funded. If we don't, we'll be disappointed. Yeah. But again, I understand. It's a great story. And we want to get people out now, because with such a crappy year, I want to start off 2020. People are going to be hopeful with a really warm, heartfelt story. You kind of kicked itself off. That's really kind of the whole backbone of wanting to get these books in people's hands, because it's a good boost. It's a good, warm, it's something that not only the kids can read, but everyone can read and start a new tradition. This is something you can read every holiday season, you know?
Yeah. And it's part of the reason that I wanted to have you on to talk about it. Cause you know, that's exactly that positive note to end 2020 on is exactly why we're doing the 12 days of the Comic Source, and we're inviting creators to come on, and we don't want to talk about the negative. We just want to talk about the positive, because as tough as this year's been, there's been a lot of positive. I mean, it's been actually a really great year for comics. And I don't know, I'm sure part of it is people are stuck at home. They're rediscovering things they used to love as a kid. They're not spending money on vacation, or sometimes even commuting to work, or, you know, have to buy lunch for work or what have you. And so a little bit more disposable income for some people. I know other people are struggling. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, this kind of a story is you know, uplifting, and it can remind us of our childhood with the snowman and just the, you know, this great time of year. And you in fact even have some rewards beyond just the comic. Do you want to let our listeners know what some of the other rewards they can get are?
Yeah, so I, besides doing comic books when I retired, I got into acting, and it's been going fairly good the past few years. 2020 has been tough because the film industry basically shut down in March. Hasn't really turned up yet. But before that happened, I was able to be one of the lead actors in a feature Christmas film called The Christmas Ride, which actually is on Amazon right now. And if you have Prime, you can watch it for free. It is a mumblecore film. And if you don't know what that is, because I didn't know what it was, it means that the movie was 100% improv. Everything was improv. You had your characters that you built yourself. You were put into some situations, and then whatever came out naturally when you were talking, that's basically what happened. And Stephanie Davis is the creator and director, and she was a one-person crew. She was the camera person, she was the director, she was sound, she was everything. And it's 77 minutes of honest Christmas holiday film, because not everyone has a great Christmas. Some people have some things going on, and there's a lot of characters that I think someone can relate to. And it's one of the best things I've been lucky enough to actually be a part of. I've got, you know, a film that's going to be on Netflix next year, and I've got some films that came out on video on demand. I'm in a TV series that Dan Myrick and Jeffrey Reddick created called Black Veil, but by far this is the one I'm most proud of. So, and with this Kickstarter, you can get a reward tier, long answer, where you can get things from The Christmas Ride. You can get a signed poster. You can get a signed photo. You can get, goodness, there's all sorts of amazing stuff. And plus, you know, the actual book, you can get a signed script of issue number one of the comic book, and more. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of great rewards. I mean, I know myself, you know, I have to get the cover with Jenny, the one that you mentioned where she's hugging the snowman. I mean, it's just gorgeous, you know, from Mitsuhiro. And then the stickers as well. There's stickers, there's a Christmas ornament. So little bit of something for everybody, for sure. So again, everyone, just as a reminder, there's about a week left, a little less than a week left as you're listening to this. So we definitely want to get this funded, and then certainly, you know, look for it again in toward the middle of next year to start coming out from Scout. And then, obviously, like, Austin was saying, the trade paperback is going to make for a great story to be able to read it all in one sitting every Christmas and start a new tradition with your family. So Austin, I really want to thank you for your time. Best of luck on the Kickstarter. I will be promoting the heck out of this for the next 6 days, and we'll see if we can't get it funded for you. So as we're wrapping up here, you mentioned Christmas being a big deal at your house. And obviously with your daughters kind of out of the house now, are there still some traditions that you carry on? Like, what are the traditions in the Janikowski household that have stood the test of time?
Oh, so the biggest one for us is my grandmother has a sugar cookie recipe, excuse me. Just thinking about it makes my mouth water. So we have family that comes and we make Christmas cookies. Whether my girls won't be able to do it this year, they're away, but I have a niece and nephew and in-laws. My wife's parents are coming in from Georgia, and we're going to be making cookies tomorrow or Christmas Eve, flips on which day, but we do that every single year. That's the big thing. getting the family together. We have good food, a lot of flour being thrown around, making some really cute cookies to take home. And that's our big tradition. When the kids were younger, we would go actually to Disney Springs, which was downtown Disney at the time, and look at the lights. But we're not allowed to do that this year, so we're just going to make the cookies.
Well, it sounds like a great time. It sounds like a great tradition. And again, thanks for joining me. Best of luck on the campaign. And I think as we're heading into the final days of the final weekend here, I think we can move the needle. I think we can get there. So everybody, please, even if you're not going to be able to help support this Kickstarter, click on the link in the show notes and at least go and take a look and share it on your social media. Put it out on Twitter or Facebook or what have you, because there may be some other people who won't see it otherwise that might be interested in checking it out. So even if you're unable to support it at this time, give Austin a boost here. It is the season of giving, and hopefully we can get this project made and see it come to life. Because I definitely want to get my stickers and my cover of Stanley the Snowman.
So yeah, just to let people know, if anyone is interested in backing it, you can combine rewards. I know they have the add-on feature, which is new. I wasn't really sure on it, so I didn't do it. So if you like more than one reward tier, just you add the cost together on which tier that you choose at the end, and then just let me know which ones you get, and then I'll make sure you get it all.
Yeah, definitely. So that's going to do it for this episode. Again, thanks everyone for listening as always. On behalf of the Comic Source, we want to wish you all happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever it is you celebrate. We hope it's a joyous and wonderful time for you. And if you don't get to spend it with your family this year, for various reasons, how tough 2020 has been, then thank you for being responsible and doing your part to help end 2020. And we'll move on. We'll all look forward to a safer 2021. And don't forget, you can always reach out to people and spend time with them digitally. At least we have that technology that's keeping us sane and allowing us to make a little bit of a connection. Things like this where I get to bring Austin on to talk about his project. So again, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.